Devil's Advocates know how to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and we're all out of bubblegum.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Thursday edition. Want to thank our most recent guest, a fine one, Mel Barnes, attorney Mel Barnes from Law Forward right here in the great state of Wisconsin. They have been instrumental on moving, you know, the case against the false Trump electors, the fraudulent Trump electors, you know, sort of the junior co-conspirators, moving that case forward, doing the God's work. Wanted to give a little legal update on one of the January 6th insurrectionists. I got to tell you, this guy looks a little bit like Wolverine. He's just got the facial hair, sort of scruffy looking guy.
Not to be confused with the Milverine wandering around who just said that there's going to be six more weeks of winter yesterday.
That guy in Milwaukee that looks a lot like the Wolverine.
I've run into him several times.
Well, this guy is a defendant in the federal court system, and he is an accused Capitol rioter. And here is a little bit of the reporting about a tense exchange he had with the federal judge during his status conference earlier this afternoon. The incident began when Josiah Kenyon asked U.S. District Judge Carl Nichols for permission to speak during the hearing. Well, it's nice. He asked for permission. Fancy Brian, you have permission to speak during the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
Very polite. After Nichols warned that Kenyon might want to consult with his attorney first, Kenyon shot back, "I have a high enough IQ range. Did not screw up there, boss." You know, when you throw the boss in, you sort of counteract the higher statement of, "I got a high IQ."
Normally when you say, "I have a high IQ," you kind of undercut the whole idea of having one.
Kenyon then proceeded to ask Nichols to acknowledge that he had a right to defend himself if prison guards in D.C. tried to assault him. So, do you understand what he's asking the judge here? Can I fight the prison guards? Mr. High IQ, that's his question.
You want to punch me right now, but you won't.
I'm not making any finding one way or another about that, said the judge. Okie dokie, said the defendant Kenyon.
I just want to know my legal precedence for defending myself before an incident occurs.
Finally, at the end of the hearing, Nichols asked Kenyon if he had any other issues to raise. "My wife and children, homeless on the street, have a wonderful day."
What?
"My wife and children, homeless on the street, have a wonderful day." Kenyon is accused of assaulting police with several objects, including a table leg with a protruding nail during the January 6th insurrection. I thought Wolverine had the sharp spikes in his hands.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's Wolverine. Although Wolverine did use a samurai sword a couple of times, or at least a katana.
According to the Department of Justice, Kenyon wore a Jack Skeleton costume based on the character from the movie The Nightmare Before Christmas.
You know, that's the thing that I'm going to wear to an insurrection is that I couldn't. All the Punisher stuff was sold out, so I had to go with Jack Skellington.
Why did they all wear costumes? I mean, seriously. Going to a protest, you know, I'm just wearing civilian jeans, maybe a sweatshirt, maybe a coat if it's cold.
Maybe a hood to go and conceal my identity or anything. But again, I guarantee you he probably looked for the Punisher and they ran out of it, so he had to go with Jack Skellington. What a loser.
Well, this man was arrested in December after authorities found him hiding out in a travel trailer with a cache of weapons. Kenyon and his wife, Elizabeth.
He was that guy.
They were reportedly charged with child endangerment after being found in an unheated trailer in the Nevada foothills. So when you say you're homeless, that's really not substantially different than you were before this legal exercise.
I'm just saying it's not like they made you. They threw. In fact, I guarantee you they probably have sought shelter since.
I want to throw a little opinion out there. Michael Gerson at the Washington Post. I won't get to all this, but I want to get started. Think Trump influence is slipping? Think again. In psychology, the presence of intrusive thoughts can be quite serious, but there's a less clinical equivalent in political writing, at least in the Donald Trump era. Now, I'm going to jump down here a little bit. The point he's making is, you know, you're thinking about inflation or vaccines or even the Ukraine. But suddenly the thought that, you know, the nation's form of self-government is in jeopardy. It is the pall that hangs over our politics. It's the unavoidable voice. For those prone to thinking that Trump's influence is declining in the GOP, the unvarnished lawlessness of his recent rhetoric, his direct threats of mob intimidation against federal prosecutors, and here in parentheticals, which after the Capitol assault implied the possibility of violence, his pondering pardons for those guilty of assaulting the Capitol, his baldly stating desire to steal a presidential election with fake electors, is actually good news. If the task is to develop a GOP brand that is distinct from Trump, his extremism makes the party discontent more likely. So bring the madness on. There's a case to be made that Trump's influence on the GOP has faded a little bit over time. His approval rating amongst Republicans has declined, and many Republicans who approve of him still don't think he should run for re-election. There is now an example created by Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin of Virginia of feeding off Trump's political energy without being subsumed into his reality. Trump's social media sway is diminished since the main channels banned him. His endorsed primary slate for the midterm election is a riskier proposition than his last one. But all this is the slightest diminution from an extraordinary height. Trump remains in the effective control of the Republican Party. He has intimidated its entire leadership cadre. He has easily prevented rivals from arising. His control over the content of conservative media has only grown stronger. And I don't know if you know this, he's got $122 million in the bank, given mainly by small donors, indicating grassroots strength. A majority of Republicans believe the 2020 election was stolen from Trump, and about half of Republicans want him to run for president again to reclaim his own. The assertion of a declining Trump influence in the GOP is not easily overstated. It is perennial. It is not so much an analysis of as an addiction. At various points during Trump's rise in 2015, the argument has been made that he is weaker than he looks before he went from strength to strength. And the damning nature of his record heightens the case for the durability of his influence. A man who's reintroduced raw racism, white grievance into our politics, is approved of by more than 80% of Republicans. A man who gathered and incited an assault on the U.S. Capitol is approved of by more than 80% of Republicans. A man who contemplated a military coup against the Constitution is approved of by more than 80% of Republicans. In so many ways, the infection is already deep in the bone. And we got some new news. We'll share it in the next hour. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson from right here in the great state of Wisconsin, well, he was briefed on January 4th, 2 days before the insurrection, he was in the briefings. He's been named in new reporting by the Washington Post. More crazy. Seizing NSA data to prove foreign interference in election to justify the seizing of the voting machines. And of course, the stealing of the election. It all makes sense when you put it like that. Come back, hour two of the Devil's Advocates. Harvey K., my fine guest, and Co-Devil.
If you fight any celebrity, who would you fight? I'd fight William Shatner.
If we don't battle to the death, they will kill us both.
An extremely stable genius.